Welcome to The Dolan Diaries, a show for creators of all stripes to think deeply about their art and its place in culture. My goal with this show is to encourage you to gain clarity, movement, alignment, and focus. You are a leader, whether you know it or not. Will you claim your voice and speak truth? Let's crush fear, stop complaining, stop comparing, drop the excuses, and take this creative life seriously. I'm your host, Jeff Dolan, and this is episode 14. In this episode, I want to share some clips from a conversation I had over at another podcast I co-host called Tax Pro Nation, which is super niche around tax professionals, but my guest there is too incredible not to share with you. Emmy Award-winning director Nick Nanton. I could say a lot about this guy, but here's a few. He's coached by Dan Sullivan, if you know who that is. He just directed and released a documentary on child trafficking called Operation Toussaint, produced by Russell Brunson of ClickFunnels, which is a must watch. I'll link that up in the show notes. And he basically is the mover and shaker in the room that you've never heard of. I'm hoping to change that. He's a Christian, a family man, and somehow finds time to write songs with folks in Nashville, write books, and run businesses. What can I say? I'm inspired. Let's jump in. He has some really great thoughts on environment, mindset, what it takes to succeed. I caught up with him on the road, met him at a conference in Florida. Great guy. Can't wait for you to hear this. All show notes will be at jeffdolan.com/14, where you can also subscribe to the written version of this show. Well, Nick, we were blown away by your presentation in Florida when we were down there.
Oh, thank you.
I figured with all of our shared, screenwriting and creative pursuits, there was a special place for you on the show. So looking forward to our conversation.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you.
And I think we can all agree with the Jim Rohn quote, you are the average of the five people you spend the most time with. Can we unpack that a little bit in your life? How has that been true for you, Nick?
Sure. I mean, it's funny. I actually interviewed a guy yesterday named Ben Hardy. Ben is one of the top... He's a young guy. He's 30. He's getting his PhD, but he's one of the top writers on the platform Medium.com, which is, as you probably know, a huge blogging platform. And
absolutely.
He got a book called Willpower Doesn't Work. And the whole concept is that your surroundings dictate who you become and what you do. So sort of, I haven't read the whole book. I read parts of it to interview him, but, so just to be very transparent about it. But what I picked up from it was that, it very much relates to this concept of who you hang around with. It's like, if your brain and your mind get decision fatigued very quickly. They get tired of making decisions. And if you get tired of making decisions, you typically make the easiest decision. So in order to set yourself up for success, you need to make sure that good decisions are basically already made for you based on your environment. So like, this is stupid, but like if you shouldn't run around naked in snow, you should probably make sure that you don't live, if you have to live outside and you don't have any clothes, you like live in a hot place, right? And like, that will make it work. That's like the weirdest example I've ever come up with, but anyway, take it. And the point being, the same thing happens with the people you spend time around. So if you spend time with people who, eat at Golden Corral every day, that's like their normal. And then you're going to eat Golden Corral a lot because you're going to feel like that's what normal people do. So I feel like spending time around extraordinary people makes extraordinary become normal. And it took me as a kid who, I'm an immigrant, great family had, my parents gave me more love than we could spend, but everything else was a little bit tight. I don't have a like rag story, but it was definitely very conscious of what was going on. My parents had, my dad had a business and, my mom taught autistic kids in the school system. So, he had ups and downs with businesses and, just markets in the 80s and all that stuff, right? So I was not, I really was, they gave me an awesome foundation of like loving people and serving people, but I didn't really have, and I don't think they did either, like growing up in the island. So we're from the Caribbean and it's a pretty small mentality. Like most people are trapped on the island, whether they know it or not, right? So there's sort of this scarcity mentality built in. And so they, my dad sort of got some of his first self-help when I was in high school by going to this program his company was working with at the time, sent him to this motivational speaker named Lou Tice. And it really sort of affected his life. And at the same time, I was training a ton I was trying to go to the Olympics for Barbados, that's where I was from, in tennis, and I couldn't have gone for the U.S., but there's maybe a shot. And my tennis coach was like, hey, look, you know, everyone who gets to a certain level, like I was playing 4 or 5 hours a day. I'm in Florida, it's very competitive here. And my coach is like, hey, everyone who gets to like a certain level has enough athletic talent. Like there's some people who are like freaks of nature and are gifted, but you can't do anything about that. But like the other 90% of it is mindset. So he gave me some Tony Robbins CDs that he had. And I started listening to Tony Robbins. It sort of blew my mind. So it was like 16, 17, going, wow, you can control a lot of the way you think and what goes on around you. So at that point, I started learning that like my tennis coach became sort of my motivational guy because I was spending more time around him than probably anybody else. And as I've grown and worked with so many other people, I just realized that, the people who you hang around with, their habits and their traits become yours. So if you spend time around people who, a lot of people use that quote just to talk about money. Like if you hang around with 5 broke people, you'll be the 6th. Well, that's one thing, but that's one way to look at it. But I think if you hang around with 5 people who have a trait that you're focused on, you'll become the 6th of that. So if it's money, if that's your thing, cool. Yeah, that's what's going to happen. But if it's spirituality or faith or religion, that's another characteristic that people have. It's because people are multidimensional. They don't just do one thing all the time. And if it's a mindset thing, if it's about wealth, if it's about the way you treat other people, hang around with a bunch of people who are cranky and treat people like a-holes, you're probably going to become your new normal. So a long answer to say, I think if you just set yourself up for success by hanging around people who have the traits that you want to get better at, I think you get better at it.
When that mindset shift happens, what are some of those first steps? Like, how do you make the connection? And maybe how did you make the connection when you listened to those Tony Robbins tapes and you were like, man, or CDs, and you said, wow, okay, my mindset set is shifting. How do I go from I'm in my traditional business doing things the traditional way? How do I break out of that mold because my mindset is different? And what steps do I take?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I started my first actual business at 15. It's pretty funny because I basically was trying to make money to buy a car, and I couldn't, like, no one will hire you at 15 typically because of labor laws. And so I was like, well, what do I do that is of value? Now, because I started playing tennis pretty competitively at 12, I did start teaching some tennis lessons at like 14-ish. And I realized that pretty quickly that if you get 10 kids in a group lesson on a court for 30 minutes at $5 or $10 a piece, like you can, like, oh wow, you can, life is based on exchange of values. It's not always money, but if I wanted money and I had something valuable, which was teaching other neighborhood kids tennis, getting them, whether it was just getting them out of their parents' hair for half an hour in the summer, like there was value in that. And especially Definitely. At that time, I didn't have a lot of overhead or bills or anything. So like I could probably charge it a lot less than somebody else and make a lot more money than anyone else would pay me. So I sort of figured that out. Then at 15, I sort of had a fascination with magic tricks, like a lot of kids do. And I learned how to make balloon animals and all sorts. And I called this place and did it, probably in a voice like, hey, how much does it cost to rent a clown for my kid's birthday party? And they said $150 an hour. I'm like, sold. I hung up the phone. I became a clown for $150 an hour at 15. And so, from that time, which, it was pretty funny, the stuff, you see and do and whatever. But I didn't last too long at that. But, the point was I started like around 16, I started getting into Tony Robbins stuff. And I think when things really started, so I was seeking anyway, like I needed to make money. I needed to learn about success. I needed to have the right mindset to win and to play, at peak performance, playing tennis in Florida, 3.5-hour matches sometimes in July, all that sort of stuff, prepping to try to get college scholarships, like academically and for athletics. Like a lot of people have been in that position, but I just realized that with some of my interests and the things that I was doing, I think the time when you realize that it's time to break out from what you've been doing is when you start having thoughts about things that you now realize are possible for you, success, things that, oh wait, there is a different way. There are ways to give more and you'll receive more rather than just keeping everything for yourself, whatever that is. And when you start floating some of those ideas by the people you've been hanging out with and they look at you like you have 3 heads, that's when wait a minute, in order to grow into the person I know I can become and to find the success that I now know exists, I got to find a different room to hang out with. And I got to find different conversations to have. So like at 16, 17, I was seeking out entrepreneurs and other successful celebrities and other people, like just try to have conversations with them. I think one of the most frustrating things to me ever was, while I didn't have a ton of experience as a kid, I wasn't an idiot. Like most ambitious young people, they don't have experience, but they have value. And I couldn't even get in so many conversations that I just wanted to have with people. I couldn't even get a seat at the table, like because of my age, because that was the qualifying factor for so many people at the time. I think what's driven me so much to do what I do now with helping people with their positioning and their branding and, you know, is to position themselves so that they never have to worry about having a seat at the table. Like that's what the reason why I became a best-selling author and the reason why I wanted to get all the media credentials I have and get on TV and win Emmys, and like, so that any conversation that I thought I could add value to or I could learn from, that it wouldn't be hard for me to get into that conversation. Like someone would invite me to the table. And I think just subconsciously, the more I think about it, the more I grow older, the more I realize, I think that was my driving factor in why I've done this stuff, because I just thought it was so unfair that my positioning and qualification in so many ways was just literally tied to my age. And I saw that happening to myself as I started my business. You know, I sort of the same thing. Oh, you're new in business, but that's not the only thing you bring to the table. So you have to find ways to display your other skill sets and other credibility. So that's one of the big reasons why I started getting into writing books and other things like that. So again, I would have a seat at the table. Now I've helped more than 3,000 clients do the same, because I want their, whether it's prospects or joint venture partners or I don't care who it is, you know, Larry King, Richard Branson, that my clients have worked with through me, to see that, you know, they have something of value to add to the conversation and can, you know, can contribute.
There's a lot of like perceptions and misconceptions and things that people think that they automatically know what's going on. Similar to, like you were saying, of being a young man, you know, where people will assume that, hey, just because you're young, you don't know anything. And I think that speaks to this whole economic and really social thing of commoditization and people feeling like, how do I stand out? How am I different? And, you know, I've been checking out your book, Story Selling, which is fantastic. The way, even in this interview, the way that you're using stories and how you can kind of relate stories and experiences that you've had, it seems like that really is, you feel like, is such a key way for people to be able to go beyond that commoditization into being viewed as a person that has value, that can have a seat at the table.
Yeah. And let me, so I appreciate the confidence on the book. We're excited about it, but you know, so the commoditization thing is really interesting. And I think a big piece of why that becomes psychologically sort of demeaning and negative experience for any industry where there's like a bar to entry before you are allowed to enter the club, whether that's becoming licensed as an attorney or licensed as a CPA or you know, being an enrolled agent with the IRS or becoming a certified personal trainer, all of the marketing before you're allowed in the door is all based on basically the fear of, like, if you don't do this, you can't come in the door. You have to be able to get through that door. So a CPA or a tax professional or a lawyer, we go, okay. So like me, when I went to law school, okay, I got to go through 3 more years of school and then I can do my thing. And that's what you're focused on. And then you get through that door and you realize, as you sort of realized before, but don't really talk about it, no, that is the baseline for entry. Yeah. Now you just made sure you're like everybody else. That's exactly what we prepared you to do.
That's a tough realization. It really is. You're like, wow.
It's a very tough realization. And some people never realize it even. They never even consciously realize that. So the positioning and branding and storytelling conversation comes in there to me, because I realized, you know, once I realized these things, that the thing that people were fascinated with when I was practicing a little bit of entertainment law was that I was a songwriter. I'd written songs in Nashville. I produced albums. I'd had songs on TV shows. I was coming at entertainment law from being, I'd already been on the other side of the table as an artist and a writer and stuff. So I could give you advice beyond legal advice. And that was what people were fascinated with. I'd worked with, at the time I'd worked with, I did an event one time with Bill Cosby I know, weird name these days. He didn't drug me, thankfully. But I coordinated everything for a big appearance he did when I was at the University of Florida. The thing I realized when I was getting entertainment clients for my law practice was that those were the things people wanted to talk about, because they already expected me to be good at law, whether I was or not, they expected it. And so the positioning and the branding was really, your brand is, and I've broken it down very simply now, you know, a lot of people will charge you 6, 7, 8 figures and show you colors and designs. And I don't knock any of that, like your logo and your appearance and it's all very important. But if you want to just strictly talk about a brand, building a brand and branding, I can make it very simple, a very simple lens to look at everything else through. And your brand is simply your story. And branding is just storytelling. It's the only thing you have. Your story is literally the only thing you have that anyone else cannot just straight up copy. And so all your life experiences and the people you've served along the way, the mistakes you've seen people make, even mistakes you've made, have prepared you to be, you know, the most uniquely positioned person to help your prospect, your target client. But you have to learn how to tell your story so that you can, that is your brand, so that everyone knows that you're the person for them. Like that's how you can help them. And so that's up to you to learn how to do that.
So Nick, our listeners are probably listening to this and listening to all your experience and saying, yeah, but Nick has been telling stories. I mean, he's a songwriter, he's a lawyer, he's all this. He's good at telling stories. What if I'm not good at telling stories?
It's a learned skill. You know, the reason why I write songs and I still have a deal in Nashville, even though I live outside of Orlando, is because the best songwriters are in Nashville. Every time I go into the room, 99% of the time, every time I go in the room to write, I'm the worst writer in the room, which I love to be, because everyone else, I can have an idea and someone who has 100 hits can say, oh yeah. And they say like this and you go, yeah. And I never would have come up with that. And it's 100 times better. So it's just by hanging out with people who are good storytellers. Look at your study story. I mean, tell the most important thing you can do in any story is certainly not be story in any way, shape or form can never be too long, just too boring. You know, people will talk about length of things all the time. Of stories. And, you know, there's a reason people have read, you know, all 87 Harry Potter books or whatever it is, or like people are attracted to what interests them. So learn how to tell a story and be interesting. Learn how to leave out the details that make no sense. You know, add some humor and make sure they have a point. Don't tell a story to not tell a point. Like, I don't tell you the story about feeling like I never got a seat at the table so that you feel bad for young Nick. It's so that I can relate to those who are on the call, like, man, I sort of feel like that now, or I felt that way too. And then you realize that I realized why I wasn't getting a seat at the table. And then I realized what could get me a seat at the table. And then of course, my business these days and my books and everything else is about all the things that we do to help you get that seat at the table.
When that happens, Nick, and when people follow some of the techniques that you lay out in story selling and in some of your other materials, it seems like once the client or the prospect or who person you're talking to pulls you out of that commodity box and stops viewing you like everybody else because they've heard some story or part of your story, it seems like once that happens, it lasts forever in a way in that relationship. Do you find that to be true?
Yeah, you then have a connection. You're connected to them. They trust you. They believe you. Yeah, absolutely. The other thing I think is, well, there's a lot of people who say, yeah, I don't want to, that's not important. I don't want to talk about myself. Well, first of all, here's the deal. If you brand yourself and position yourself correctly, you don't have to talk about yourself a lot. Everything else does it for you. Everyone else does it for you. Every book you have does it for you. Every interview people listen to, every podcast, it does it for you. The other thing I would say is the way you connect with an audience, whether that's an audience of one or an audience of many, is when you realize, when you stop doing it for you and start doing it for them. So if you look around a room at a person who's telling jokes or telling stories at a dinner table or at an event, and if everyone's having a good time, you realize that person's realizing you're not doing it for them. It's a very different scene. And we've all seen it whether it's at a Thanksgiving dinner or whatever, and someone's just telling story after story after story, and everyone is disengaged. And it's very obvious if you stop and know the nuance, they're not telling the story for the audience. They're telling a story for their own, you know, for their own ego or for whatever else. And so I think modesty and humility are great things. But the only thing you have to do to get over thinking, I don't want to tell my story or whatever, is just ask yourself the question, well, am I telling this story for my own benefit or for someone else's? And if it's for the benefit of the person in front of you, I bet you they'll think it's very engaging and be very thankful you told that story. So it's sort of get out of your own way, stop thinking about yourself, think about others, and then do whatever it takes to serve them. And then it's a pretty good litmus test for everything else you're going to do. I look for people, you know, one of my huge mentors, my business coach, Dan Sullivan, talks about unique ability. And unique ability is like, you should be working your whole life towards the fact that everything, like paring down the things that you do so that the thing you didn't realize was causing you friction is causing you friction. It just didn't cause you the most friction, so you didn't really notice it. So as you pare down the things you don't enjoy doing, you're really trying to get to the fact that where every day you're just doing one thing. That's your unique ability. It's the thing you should be doing on earth that provides the most value. You get paid the best for it. You're more motivated to do more of it every day. And it's not sometimes what you think of. Like Dan Sullivan, my coach, he says his unique ability is having great conversations that lead to a better future. Now that's pretty broad, but like he won't do anything if it doesn't involve a great conversation. So if you ask him to write you an essay on something, not going to do it. If you want to interview him, sure. That's a great conversation. And then you can turn it into an essay and he'll review it and approve it or whatever. But like, you don't start with a great conversation. He's like, not interested. So I rely on the fact that my unique ability is connecting people, trying to make a brighter future for everybody, having great conversations. I'm still narrowing down my unique abilities. But like the guy I interviewed yesterday, Ben Hardy, his book, awesome book, you know, Willpower Doesn't Work. He's a writer and he's got a PhD and he told me how he structures his day and it's awesome for him. I try to structure my day with like pretty much as little structure as possible. Because for me, I want to leave room for, in my case, I believe in God, I believe what I believe in. Like I want to leave room for God to work. Like I had a friend call me and say, he really needs some advice. And if I was booked up 9 to 7 every day, I won't be able to help him. So yeah, I book time for this podcast. I have lunch with somebody I want to have lunch with every day, no matter where I'm at, because it's relational and I got to eat anyway. So we'll talk business or friendship or whatever. And then I got other phone calls and stuff. But like, man, like my unique ability is talking to people and having great conversations and figuring out where's their value in this or how can I connect you to somebody else. So I do things very differently than him. And he's like, wow, that's really awesome. Most people will hear what I do and think they have to do the same thing. That's just the way it works for me based on what I need to accomplish. So I guess I work well with my dad because I understand the concept of unique ability and freedom. And I think I probably mentioned this because I just learned this concept at the event I spoke at, you saw me at. You know, there's really two types of people. I learned this from a book called Da Vinci and the 40 Laws. Da Vinci and the 40 Answers. And I don't remember the title that well because I'm only 3 pages in, but I got a lot so far. But what I learned is that I can teach you is that, look, there's basically two types of people. People who seek control, people seek the ability to control an outcome. Like I know what I want and I'm going to control everything and everyone around me to get there. And then there's type of people who they value freedom. Like me, I value freedom of what Dan Sullivan would call the freedoms of, you know, entrepreneurial freedoms, the freedoms of time and relationships and money. And you know, so I value freedom and people who seek freedom, they value freedom so much that they don't even know what the outcome could be if they allowed everyone else to operate within their unique ability as well. So rather than try to control the situation, surround yourself with great people that you trust and give them freedom to do what they do as long as they're delivering the things you need, because the outcome is likely much better, much like me in songwriting. Like I realize I'm not the best writer in the room. We often write my idea because I got fresh ideas, but I may not be the best lyricist or musician or whatever in the room. I mean, I contribute to all those things, but I give them the freedom to do what they do really well and just try to provide the value I provide. Like I put people in a room that have never written together before and we create something really cool. So I provide a different style of value and I'm cool with that. I'm not trying to control everything we're going to do because I can just do that on my own. Like why collaborate? If I know what I think it should be, then I'm either the best in the world. And if I'm the best in the world, I'm probably seeking something more anyway. And that all comes through collaboration.
So Nick, just to kind of get back to what you're saying about telling your story, you know, through other things, and then staying in your lane, knowing what you're good at. If you find that you're not good at telling your story, and we live in this age where we have, you know, podcasts and films and books and all these things that could be out there telling our story, you know, our website, how we interact with people,
blog, yep.
and blogging and writing. I mean, we have all this technology at our fingertips. But if we know what we're great at and it's not telling stories through these other mechanisms, maybe the answer is to surround ourselves with people that can help us tell our story through those different mediums.
You absolutely should surround yourself with people who know how to do it. There's different types of storytelling. Like for instance, you know, I was a decent writer. I had to write a lot in college and high school and stuff, but I don't like it. Like I don't wake up every morning and say, I cannot wait to sit down and write this afternoon or this morning before I do anything else. And I think that that's a really good indicator of like, there's some friction there somehow. Not that I couldn't break through that with probably years of therapy or something. I don't know. But like, why? Okay. So if I wake up and don't, and I'm not excited to do that, why would I ever set myself up to say, okay, I need to deliver 40,000 words that I'm going to write on something, but I do enjoy being interviewed, talking to people, having great conversations. Oh, wait a minute. There's a methodology that I could just talk to people who do wake up in the morning and can't wait to write. Wait a minute. Let me connect those dots. And so our business, what we've tried to do is just is remove those frictions from people to get them where they need to be by providing the team and the tools and resources of, I do have writers who wake up in the morning and can't wait to write. I have great writers like, you know, Dan Sullivan, again, my business coach, you know, runs Strategic Coach. You know, he made an example that you guys will find funny, you know, that he's had the same accountant for like 25, 30 years in his business. And, you know, he's like still floored that someone will sit there in a room and run those numbers every day. And, you know, he's all, I guess, sort of always worried about like when that day would end. And, you know, she ran into him like, you know, in the parking lot there or something and just said, hey, you know what? I just want to let you know just like how fulfilling it is for me to be able to run your numbers every day. I'm so thankful you've let me do this for 25 years. And like, she wakes up every day and that's what she wants to do. So
that's
find
amazing.
People who wake up every day and that's what they want to do. There are people as sick and twisted as that sounds to me, that makes somebody's day. So like, that's the beauty of different people, you know?
Yeah. I worked in the medical industry for a long time and I say the same thing about doctors. It's like, God bless them for wanting to cut into people and operate on people. And well, that's awesome. Nick, it's been such a pleasure speaking with you today. And I'm hoping that our listeners got a lot of value out of today and in the conversation and all that you've shared. It's been super fun and we wish you nothing but the best. Is there anything that we can do to help you with what you're working on today?
Oh man, just anyone wants to follow me on social media, you can find me everywhere, Nick Nanson. As long as you spell it right, you'll find me. You can go to nicknanson.com. You can download a free copy of Story Selling. You know, you get on our list when you do that. And yeah, I mean, let me know if you think we can help. Anyone just email or reach out and we'll, myself or some of my team, will reach out and help you.
Awesome. Yeah, I do want to point everybody to the new film that you produced and directed, or that you directed with Russell Brunson of ClickFunnels, with Tim Ballard, the Operation Underground Railroad film, Operation Toussaint. It's OURfilm.org. So go to OURfilm.org and check that out. You'll see Nick's work at the DNA agency. And it's amazing. I mean, it's a must watch. And we really encourage folks to go check that out.
Thanks, Nick. Appreciate you a lot. Thank you very much.
Appreciate everything. Well, I'll be working with you soon. We'll talk soon.
Look awesome. Forward to it.
Thanks,
you.
Nick. As always, thank you so much for listening. I have been Jeff Dolan, and today is Sunday, October 28th, 2018. Please download the Anchor app on your phone. If you have not heard about this app yet, it is a brilliant platform to launch a podcast. If you're interested in doing that, please do. It's awesome. Search for my name on there. You'll find the show. Click the message button and you can call into the show. I'd love to have you on and I'd love to hear your voice. You can also subscribe at jeffdolan.com or your favorite podcast platform. I encourage you to share this with any creators in your life. We need to stick together, encourage each other. All right. Have a great week. Be kind and take care.